Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Don't sweat the technique.
Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
713-780-ESPN. Steve on the YouTube. If Bregman goes to the Hall of Fame, please tell me he'll go in as an Astro. Can I at least have that? You don't have to worry about that, Steve. Bregman's Hall of very good. Bregman's not a Hall of Famer. He's not a Hall of Famer.
He's not.
I don't think he's close to being a Hall of Famer.
I mean, did you see that when a couple people were putting out like his accomplishments individually and as a teammate when he was with here? And yeah, you get the two World Series titles. He was an All-Star, what, twice? I think he was a Gold Glove winner once.
Yeah, I don't put a whole lot of stock in the All-Star. But yeah, I think this last year was his first Gold Glove ever, yeah, which is kind of surprising.
We know the one year he was top five MVP.
He's top five twice.
Okay.
Runner-up in 19. We very easily could have won it over Trout. Maybe should have won it over Trout. Trout had like the higher war, but they were mid-team.
Mm-hmm.
Might have even been a bad team.
But overall.
Actually, Bregman had the higher war. Bregman led the league in war that year.
I've never looked at him and said Hall of Famer. Honestly, of all the guys that the position players that have played here, the only guy that I've looked at as a possible Hall of Famer is Altuve.
Yeah, I mean, I think Yordan, if he were to stay healthy and have a long career, is capable.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably bet against him though.
And I wasn't even factoring him in. I'm talking about the Springer, Correa, Altuve, Bregman. You know, that core group of core five or whatever it was.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, I would agree that those are the only Hall of Famers. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HR&P listener line. Willie, you're in the Hive. What's going on, Willie?
Thanks for taking my call. I was calling about the if the window was closed.
Yeah.
I don't think that the window is all the way closed, but a couple of things I don't like about the current Astros that we've had in the past is When Jeff was here, he liked to get players that didn't make errors. The Astros had the least amount of errors in the league for a number of years, and he didn't like guys that struck out a lot, like, say, Teoscar Hernandez for one. You know, he traded him because he struck out over 100 times a year. And some of the guys, you know, they walked more than they struck out. Those are we're not getting those kind of guys anymore. You know, we're going more to an offensive team instead of a pitching and defensive team. You know, we created two Gold Glovers, even though Alex only won one Gold Glove, but he was still one of the top third basemen in the league. Just had Max Chapman in the same division I wouldn't say that. I've been watching. Oh well, not watching anymore. Well, listening to the Astros since 1968, and I've never seen a better defensive baseball player than Carlos Correa. He might get hurt often, and he can't hit like Altuve. But Altuve will never be a defensive player.
No.
But none of the rest of them over there that Carlos was. And thank you.
You got it, Willie.
I appreciate the call, Willie. Look, I mean, they added a Gold Glove first baseman. I think Paredes can play a capable third base.
To his point, though, sorry to interrupt. Well, I'm not sorry. But excuse me. Third base is more important than first.
Sure. Okay. But I don't think he's going to play a bad third base. Paredes, I think that you and I have had this conversation and even, you know, kind of defended him to listeners and Twitter people, but I think Pena is an above average shortstop. Now, did he have his best year last year? No, but the year before he had a great year defensively. I think he's an above average defensive shortstop. So I think that their infield can be very good. I mean, look, I made no bones about the fact that I have deep concerns about their outfield. I'm it's cringeworthy to think of Chaz, no matter what he can try to do to turn around his offense, and Jake in the outfield every day is a capable and quality outfield for a team that's got playoff aspirations and more. That's why I'm still hopeful that there's something that they will do along the way to fortify the outfield. But overall, the team is too deep with talent, and the pitching staff is too good for me to think that they're not going to be a playoff contending team.
Yeah, I mean, I hear where Willie's coming from. I do think that they are a lesser defensive team than they were a year ago. Now, what is the delta there? Time will tell. I think where Altuve plays matters here, too, because he talked about two gold glove guys. Bregman won one, but he's an elite defender. Tucker is another guy who, I mean, he actually was kind of trending downwards defensively. Like, last year was not – 2 years ago was not that good. Last year he played in 50-something games. 2 years ago is when he won that gold glove. But a good defensive right fielder, and Chaz has no arm in right field, so that's terrifying there. But if you do replace it with Walker at first, again, not as important as third, he's a gold glove winner. And if Dubon plays second base more than half of the games, now you have replaced a bad defensive second baseman with a guy who is also a gold glove guy, won the utility gold glove a couple of years ago. So I wouldn't say they're as good defensively as they were last year, and if we account the 50-something games where Tucker was available. But I don't know if it's that great of a divide.
Well, and you mentioned Jake, too, and you're the one that always points out about he's an above-average defensive
center fielder.
Yeah, but
he's the common denominator. Like, he was here last year, so, like, there's no change there.
Okay, I'm just saying for the overall defense of the team, to have an above-average center fielder defensively, too, kind of adds to your overall team defense to where I don't think it's that shabby.
Sure, but if you're comparing this year to last year, you couldn't use Jake against each other.
Right. No, I mean, yeah, it's a wash, and unless you're Kyle Ravitch, but I think that, yeah, you're right. You lose Tucker and you lose Bregman. You lose two guys that have won gold gloves in the past. I get that. Right field scares the hell out of me right now.
And look, hopefully Chaz can be, like, I don't even need Chaz from 2 years ago. How about just Chaz's career numbers? Just be that guy and maybe you can get by. My pipe dream scenario in the outfield is that the aircraft carrier, Cam Smith, lights up the minor leagues for the first few months of the year, and it's like July 15th, and it's like, we need to call this guy up because he is forcing our hand, and then he comes in and he's batting seventh and he gives you an actual threat. Mm-hmm. Like, that would be my pipe dream, as opposed to, you know, trade deadline or something like that. Keith, I think there's a greater chance that we do something at the deadline now that Bregman is gone. Maybe they have $5 million to spend. And we know that Jim Crane's M.O. is he does not want to go over the competitive balance tax unless it's for a splash. Bregman, yes. Verdugo, probably not. Zach Greinke, yes. J.T. Chagwall, no. Michael Conforto, no. He's not going into the luxury tax for those guys. Is Paul Wright, those guys could have helped you? Yeah, they could have helped you. But is Conforto at $17 million a year worth going into the CBT? Probably not.
Verlander was. When he went
Verlander would have been a splash. Like, those are the big names he'll do it for. And I also think that there are people, well, you know, who cares about the owner's wallet? I understand that. Like, hey, we're not getting that money. Why do we care? There are negative ramifications to be a repeat offender, to be over the luxury tax. Like, somebody texted in earlier, well, it's okay that Bregman's gone. They get a compensation pick for him. Well, because the Astros were over the competitive balance tax, that compensation pick is a fourth. If they think Framber Valdez is leaving next offseason, you're over the CBT because of Michael Conforto. Now you're getting a fourth for Framber leaving instead of a first round comp. So and then it's also more expensive if you were to sign better free agents. So I think it actually makes sense to reset that clock, not be a repeat offender. Montero's coming off the books. Jose Abreu's coming off the books. Who knows what they do with Framber Valdez? That would clear up money if you don't re-sign him. They would be in position to have some money. And the whole, like, Jim Crane never making the team better, it's all for show. I can't agree with that when Jim Crane is constantly either right at the CBT or is willing to go over it for the splashes. I think Josh Hader pushed him over the CBT last year.
I also think that he also he loves winning. And I believe that if this team, you know, is winning and has a chance to win, you know, and it looks like, you know, they're heading in the right direction, I don't think he's afraid to make that splash before the deadline to get an extra bat or whatever they need to kind of push them over the top or improve their chances to actually go farther and win more. So I don't doubt that Jim Crane he's willing to do whatever it takes within the season to go get somebody. I wish they would still be looking now or seeing if there's any way to try and improve the outfield now. But look, I believe that they're going to be hanging around enough that hopefully there's a chance that as we get closer to the deadline, whether it's a team that's selling or the fact that, you know, you can just go out and find someone that's on an expiring contract that a team wants to unload, that you can make this outfield better.
713-780-ESPN. Back out to the HRMP listener line. Keith, you're in the Hive. What's up, Keith?
Hey, guys, can you hear me? Sorry about the phone issues a couple days ago. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Hey, I think the window, you can't close it all the way yet. I think their top six in the lineup are above average. You know, 7, 8, 9 might be an automatic three out with the outfield issues. But the top six is good. The starting pitching is good. You know, with the back end of the bullpen, Abreu and Hader are good. You know, I just think 7, 8, 9, until they lose the division, I think you still keep that window cracked just a little bit, but they got to sign an outfielder. You can't go in with, you know, Dubon, Myers, McCormick, Gamel, Alfred. You just can't.
Appreciate the call, Keith. Look, I think that if you listen to Dana Brown, you know, as well, you hear a guy that says roster as is right now capable, good enough to win the division. So I'm with you. I'm a firm believer, and we've gotten into it about the fact that I really would love to see them still go out and find one bat in the outfield. But it's not looking great. So you just got to hope for the next best thing, which would be if they are rolling, then the scenario I painted, maybe between now and the deadline they get somebody.
What if I told you there is a Hall of Famer currently on the roster that is the greatest Astro of all time that you could move to the outfield?
Okay, Jose Altuve.
That improves your outfield from an offensive standpoint.
Offensively,
for sure.
It does. Yeah.
That's what we're griping about, right? Is that their offense it stinks in the outfield. Well, you make him an outfielder, which they're toying with the idea. That improves your outfield offense tremendously. Tremendously.
But you're moving him from second to outfield, and who you're replacing him with, Dubon at second?
We're talking
Aren't
about
you just shuffling deck chairs at that point?
No, you're getting better defensively.
I know. I'm talking strictly offensively. You're shuffling deck chairs to me.
You mean yes.
Yeah. So that's not really an improvement. I mean, and defensively, yes, given obviously, but I mean, to Keith's point, and other people who are concerned about the offense, like it doesn't really change anything.
Yeah, I think that Espada will, like Keith said, the top six are above average, which I agree. I mean, you're looking at who knows the order, who really cares about the order? Although Yordan should be batting fourth. Altuve, he's above average, obviously. Isak Paredes, we just had a texter saying concerned about him because his like advanced numbers and stuff is weird. He has a weird profile, I admit that. Like soft contact, like doesn't walk a ton, doesn't strike out a ton.
Extremely pool heavy.
Doesn't hit a lot of barrels, but like hits 30 home runs. he has a weird profile. It is kind of weird, but he's been kind of consistent with it. Also, but it does kind of scare me that Tampa Bay was so willing to trade him away with years of club control. Like the Rays don't usually trade away really good players with years of club control. They usually wait till they're about to hit free agency, and they didn't get a great return for him either. So it's kind of like, what if the Rays don't think highly of him, should I think highly of him? But I think he's an above average offensive player. Christian Walker clearly is an above average offensive player. Christian Walker last three seasons home runs. Christian Walker, by the way, was a better offensive player last year than Alex Bregman. Just saying. Walker's last 3 years, 36 home runs, 33 home runs, 26 home runs last year, but he played in 130 games. Now, he is getting older, so like, hey, no Jose Abreu-ing. Don't do a Jose Abreu thing, Christian Walker. And then you have Yordan, who might be the best offensive player in all of baseball, and Yiner. Like, those top five guys are above average. That's a good top five of the order. That's a top five that's going to score a lot of runs. After that, it gets murky. Like, is Jeremy Payne above average? Jeremy Payne is average at best, but can he become above average? I think it's possible that he can become a 110 OPS plus guy. I mean, he's been right around 100 for the first 3 years of his career. Could he be 110? Sure, he could be 110. Could Chaz McCormick revert, not even back to who he was 2 years ago, can he revert to his career numbers prior to last year? I think that's in play, and if he does that, he's an above-average offensive player. Now, Jake Myers is probably never going to be an above-average offensive player. Can you platoon Ben Gamel and Mauricio Dubon to get average out of them? Maybe. But if 8, 9 are average, or if 8's average and 9's below average, but the 7 above them are all above average, that's a pretty good offense.
No, I'm not worried about the offense. But I still am concerned because then I would like to say that regardless of whether – if you go and say Altuve is going to be your left fielder, then can you find a better offensive bat to play second so that you still have Dubon that can be your utility guy and you can move him around, but that you improve the offense with the second baseman?
I don't think that they're adding to this team. I think what you have is what you're going to get come opening day. I don't think they're signing free agents. I think they said, here, we're willing to do this for Bregman, but nobody else. Because there is a major incentive to resetting the count of being over the competitive balance tax. So I'm okay with that. Like, there's nobody out there that moves the needle for me. Do I want to spend Conforto $17 million and then pay a tax on that, repeat offender? I'm not getting the compensation for Fromber when he leaves? No, I don't want to do that. A JT Shagwald, $1 million, that would have been shrewd. I'm not going to argue with that. That would have been a good pickup. Lefty, very good ERA, went to Rice. That would have been fine. But they do have a bunch of arms. Like, they have some arms that I think are going to be fine. Like, Forrest Whitley has to be on the team. Like, so you don't really have a ton of room on the roster. Your 40-man's full, all of that. So I think they're going to be all right. I really do.
Yeah.
I don't think the window's closed.
No, I don't think the window's closed. And I hope that we get, you know, just better than serviceable out of some outfielders, because I really believe in the rest of the offense. And I do believe in the top six. And I think that top six can compete with just about any lineup in the American League. So I feel good about that. I would just feel a whole hell of a lot better if they had the ability to get one more bat.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody shares that sentiment. I just think it's very unlikely.
But because of the scenario you just painted, it doesn't even have to be an outfielder if you get a better hitting second baseman and Dubon can kind of do utility for you. And if he plays, you know, right field and moves around a little bit, then maybe that's fine.
Yeah, but the guy doesn't exist. Like, he's not out there.
It would have to be a trade.
Yeah, I think like this time of year, right, trades are pretty, you know, rare. 713-780-ESPN. Back out to the HRMP listener line. Reese, you're in the Hive. What's up, Reese?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. I had to take my Bluetooth off. So y'all keep talking about these texts, and it's very annoying as a Houstonian and an Astros fan. And I don't want to be telling no one how to spend their money. But the tax doesn't work in baseball. And why do the Astros have to worry about being repeat offenders when the Yankees and the Dodgers live in this tax threshold, and it's so bad that it doesn't even affect them? Were they able to keep going spending outrageous money on every free agent, and everybody's best player gets sent to the Yankees every year? If you're losing draft picks, the Yankees and the Dodgers never lose draft picks. But time and time again, as Astros fans, we have to continue to hear about this tax. And it's just not fair to, you know, baseball fans. So the tax doesn't work. And I just like to see 1 year or two or four, just go over and go for it. And so, you know, we can enjoy what we have here. We probably would still have some of those players here if he was willing to go over the tax.
Appreciate the call, Reese. Look, you're never going to be the Yankees or the Dodgers with their unlimited spending and their budgets and their abilities, but we also have to give credit to the fact that the Yankees and the Dodgers also go out and get those players on a frequent basis because their farm system's been loaded. They've drafted well. They've kept their draft picks. They save them. Some end up playing for them. Some they end up using in the deals that bring in other players. But, yeah, the frustration is you're never going to be one of the big dogs like the Mets, Yankees, and Dodgers.
See, I'm okay with that because I realize that. Like, I've accepted that the Astros aren't going to spend like the Dodgers and Yankees, and I don't think it's sustainable for a team in Houston to do that. Or even the Mets, like Cohen. The Angels did it, and the Angels were awful at it. The Angels were the worst at it. Now, I think Reese speaks to, like, a bigger problem with Major League Baseball, which I would agree with. I would like to see a salary cap in Major League Baseball, or maybe some sort of, and I don't know the right answer to this, maybe some sort of innovation where the NBA is starting to do these aprons and stuff like that, where it makes it very, very difficult to just sign all of the players in the world. So I agree with where Reese's mind's at. I think it's a bigger issue than, like, the Astros specifically. And Crane has went over the tax twice. He did it whenever they traded for Greinke, but I don't think he paid for it because of the COVID thing, whatever. And then he was over the tax last year. Like, he went for it last year. So
yeah, and I think that when you're talking about the bigger picture probably comes down to the next time there's a collective bargaining agreement, too, because the Players Association is not going to be in favor of any kind of cap while all their players are, you know, raking in the funds. So that's probably going to be part of a bigger negotiation.
It probably will never happen. Like it probably will never happen because the Major League Baseball Players Association will not play if there is a salary cap, more than likely. And Manfred's alluded, too, to the fact that I think there's going to be some sort of work stoppage with the next CBA, which is terrible. I hate when that happens.
I mean, the only way they could I don't think they're going to get a salary cap input, but they would have to – Major League Baseball would have to be willing to give something back to the players that I can't even comprehend what that would be. Like there would have to be a give and take, but I don't even know – what they could ask from Major League Baseball that would be worth it for
it'd be more revenue sharing?
No, I think that the answer would be players entering free agency sooner.
Yeah, that would be a big one. Like if you cut it, let's say, from 6 years to 3 years.
Yeah, which is very hard.
Which is crazy, but yeah. I think that might...
It would have to be something that crazy, though.
It would, because a radical change from basically the Wild Wild West like we have now to a salary, like a hard salary cap, like let's say the NFL, is a drastic, drastic change. So
that would be a seismic.
I'd be for it though. If cutting the team control from 6 to 3 got us a salary cap, I'd be in favor of that.
We got 2 more years.
Yeah,
I don't think it's going to happen.
No,
I'm just talking
saying
about
the collective bargaining agreement that they're currently on expires December 1st, 2026.
There were some theories that that's why Bregman ultimately signed the shorter term deal for the larger AAV, was to kind of beat the clock on when there might be a work stoppage. I don't know how much validity there is to that, but I did see that kicked around. Texter, DeZinzo and Milton are options too. Yeah, I mean maybe a DeZinzo and Milton surprise you, and I'm not saying that they're going to surprise you and become all stars, but if they surprise you and become average big league hitters, well now you have an average big league hitter in the bottom of the order that you didn't think you were going to have, which is a pretty significant improvement to what your expectations are. Cam, it's probably too early for Cam Smith. Like I don't expect Cam Smith to get caught up this year. But an ultimate pipe dream, oh my goodness, this guy's crushing the minors, and then all of a sudden he's a factor this year, would be a huge win. Caleb says McCormick got better every year he played up until last year. If he gets back to what he was doing 2 years ago on the offense and the outfield will be fine. Fine might be too strong, but maybe tolerable could be better if Chaz is there.
Yeah, I mean, some people are talking about Trammell, too, as a guy that could do something and be something. I would put more stock in the fact that if I'm going to be extremely hopeful, it would be Melton as probably a guy that might be able to do something for you. But other than that, the farm system from an outfield perspective isn't really exciting right now besides Cam Smith. And I agree with you. I don't think he's ready. And then Bryce Matthews is an infielder.
Yeah, I wonder if what they eventually do with Bryce Matthews. Some prospect guys aren't crazy about Matthews. Not crazy about Melton either. Melton had a lot of strikeouts when he got to AAA last year. He's not close, in my opinion. Trammell is a 4A player. I think Trammell is going to be either in Sugarland or on the streets April 1st.
See Trey Cabbagey?
I was just about to make less. That exact same comparison.
Right? Trammell was kind of a decorated prospect that, like, has never been able to stick. So, unless he just fools everybody. Brandon T. Willie's my favorite caller. Yeah, I think he's my favorite, too. Texter, I wish we would have traded Bregman for prospects instead of losing him for nothing. Lost him for a fourth rounder. But, yeah, I mean, that's a theory that I always have. I think you should trade your players before they enter free agency, especially if you're above the competitive balance tax. I like Paredes, but I'm a little worried. One of the slowest bats and one of the slowest exit velos in the game. All the advanced stats say he sucks, but maybe the wall will do him good. He's got a weird profile. He really, really does. A window is wide open, perfect reset year. We'll have a lot of money coming off the books next year, and most of our talent is still cheap and controllable. That's an optimistic viewpoint. The Ocho, the Astros aren't as fundamentally sound as in past years, when the pitching and defense were always a constant. Look, I like Fromber and Hunter Brown. I think Fromber and Hunter – actually, I'll tell you. I placed a Hunter Brown to win the Cy Young ticket today. Plus 2,500, best value in the American
League.
Odds. Best value in the American League. A window is never closed if you make it to the dance. Look at the D-backs 2 years ago. A dude told us Michael Conforto as his standing point. What the heck? That's from Eric. Especially at 17. I liked Conforto as an option for the Astros, but at 17? No way. I hate when people say the Astros don't have a farm system. Skeeters just want a ship. Yeah, but were they doing it with 4A players or prospects? I will say,
Space
though,
Cowboys.
I will say this, though. The Astros always outproduce their prospect rankings.
For sure.
They always outproduce that. Always.
We've had a lot. We've had a lot of guys that weren't on the radar that suddenly either got you something in a trade or became significant prospects to look at that had a chance to contribute to the big league club. I agree with that.
The window hasn't been slammed shut, but I kind of wish we were Detroit right now? 69-41, go to the mirror and think about what you just said. You wish you were Detroit right now. Astros pitching staff.
Patrick Boulevard, is that coming up pretty soon? That needs to possibly be added.
As I was saying that, though, I thought about the Lions, so maybe I should be on Bad Take Boulevard. Astros pitching staff will determine if we're winners or losers this year. Window shut, nah. Breggy's one of the guys. We won't boo. Grateful for the good times. Fair enough. Window is open. People like to talk about who we lost, but nobody talks about the players we brought in. Walker, Paredes, nice additions. I think people also lose sight of the fact that Kyle Tucker missed half of the year. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, this year's team does not have Kyle Tucker. Last year's team for half the season also did not have Kyle
and
Tucker.
And think about the point in the season when they didn't have him. That's when the big turnaround happened. That's when they were so many games behind in first place that they started the turnaround, and they did the majority of that turnaround and all that success without Kyle Tucker in the lineup.
It's weird. Because
I hear what you're saying.
Did.
They're better without Kyle Tucker.
They played.
That's not what I said.
Their win-loss record
was
better.
I'm picking up what you're laying down, Joel.
Their win-loss record was better without Kyle Tucker last year.
They're better without Kyle Tucker,
which is really weird because Kyle Tucker in the half the season, less than half the season he played, was unbelievable.
He was an MVP candidate before he got hurt.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, he was having an MVP type of season and then fouled a ball off his shin that was a bruise, and he's expected back in a couple of days, turned into a broken bone, and somehow the Astros got better.
Crime.com and Google and Yahoo Sports have the headline, Killer Bees say Astros were better without Tucker.
100%. That's what I heard.
Astros are as competitive as last season, if not better. The upgrade at first is huge. Imagine being grown adults and wishing for someone's downfall because they made a business decision best suited for him. We got the best of Bregman. Be happy about that. Grow up, guys. Imagine being a full-grown adult and texting that into a radio show that's obviously being very silly.
And who says we're adults?
I think the Astros can have a better overall infield this year, says another texter. The window is slightly ajar, but you can barely feel the breeze coming in. You don't feel breezes in Houston, especially in the summer. The ill will is not at Bregman or any other star Astro. It's with Crane. See, Crane's getting – my biggest issue with Crane, though, is his meddling after he fired Luno.
I think that's a fair take, though. I do sense that the most of the fan hand-wringing comes from the front office, not the players themselves.
But you don't agree with it. Because I don't think that any move that Jim Crane decided not to do was a bad move. Because I don't think anybody, because you were never going to re-sign Cole. He was going to the Yankees. That's where he wanted to go. He's always wanted to play for him. You weren't going to get him. Springer letting him walk, great decision.
I think the counter to that would be, sure, the moves he did make. But the moves he did make, like Montero Abreu, you put yourself in a situation where you can't afford or afford guys like Bregman.
I think that's to Jeremy's point. I don't think that it's – I wouldn't be mad at him for letting some of these big names that everybody's got their heartstrings tied to walk. It would be that when – that he actually had the arrogance to think that, one, that James Click wasn't – He could do without him, and he got rid of him. And that in the interim, while he was looking for someone that he could maybe control more or get in here, he decided that he and his buddies could do the exact same job, and then you got screwed.
Yeah, I don't like that Crane fired Luno and just didn't ride out the storm there. I'm not a fan of that. I don't like that he fired Click. I don't like that they ran a front office without a general manager for a few months, an entire offseason, and they signed Jose Abreu, Rafael Montero, and Michael Brantley. Which we're still feeling the effects of Abreu and Montero. So that's what I'm angry with Jim Crane about. I'm not angry at Jim Crane for his lack of spending because that's not true.
I don't think he's cheap. It's not.
That's not true. It's the firing Luno, firing Click, operating in the offseason without a GM, and having a disastrous offseason. And I hope that he's not meddling now. My feel is that he's not because I don't think they trade Kyle Tucker if he's meddling.
Yeah, I hope he's learned his lesson, and I hope that he now kind of is more hands-off and allows the guys that he actually hired to do their jobs, he lets them do their jobs. Now, is Dana Brown going to be capable of doing that job? I think we're still kind of trying to find out. I think his hands have been tied for a lot of stuff since he got the job.
He's our last hope. Like, if the Astros window is dying, the last hope to save it from dying or closing is Dana Brown.
Yeah.
It is. Like, it's the reality of the situation. Final text, can we be honest now that Breggy Bomb Salsa was trash? Bro, I've been saying that the Breggy Bomb Salsa has been trash for 3 years. What do you mean, can we be honest now? I was honest 3 years ago that Breggy Bomb Salsa was garbage.
No, you have.
Yeah.
I've never tried it.
Is Cam Smith the third baseman?
He can be, right?
That's his primary position right now, but Dana Brown says that he can play either corner infield spot or any corner outfield spot. So if he's pressing himself into the lineup and you don't have injuries, then the spot would more than likely be right field. And he's got a big arm, so And he's a pretty good athlete. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Rockets, they played a basketball game yesterday. What'd you think of the Rockets beating the Suns last night? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Kind of segueing perfectly into this. First, a minute on Pro Dunk Hoops. Look, it is basketball season. NBA fully in swing. College basketball. We are on a fast break to March. So you need a goal from Pro Dunk. Better than any of the goals you'll find at the big box stores. Those aren't any good. Rim's going to jack up quickly. The backboard's going to break. The little gust of wind might even blow it over. You don't have to worry about any of that stuff with a goal from Pro Dunk. The highest quality basketball goals you'll find. Don't mess with the big box stuff. Tempered glass backboard gives you a true, authentic feel off of that backboard. A breakaway rim, more on that later. Stainless steel hardware, it's rust-proof, must-have, of course, with the humidity in Houston. Height adjustable, anywhere from 5 feet to 10 feet. Their new goal, Thor, you can raise and lower the goals with a drill. It's their lightning adjust feature, easy to do, fun to do, anywhere from 5 to 10 feet in a matter of seconds. That's where that breakaway rim comes into play. You're lowering, throw down some jams, that breakaway rim's going to keep you safe. Extended overhang as well, so you don't have to roll your ankle in the basketball stanchion for all you folks that have weak ankles. Their accessories next level as well. LED light kits for night play. You're at work, kids are at school, can't play during the day, no problem. Get an LED light kit. Backstop nets. You don't want to chase the basketball around. No problem. Get a backstop net. Pull pad lettering, customize your goal, lots, lots more. You can order all of that, including professional installation, online at ProDunk.com. You don't want that big box delivered to your driveway with a million pieces to assemble. You're going to screw it up. Let's be honest with each other. Let the pros at ProDunk professionally install that goal for you. Perfectly straight. It's at the perfect height. You're not going to mess it up. You don't install. You hang out inside the house. Let the pros at ProDunk do that work for you. Give them a call at 281-351-9822, 281-351-9822. And visit ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You found the Killer Bees live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ojo sending us his bets that he's making tonight. You do you, Oach. I'll be rooting for you. 713-780-ESPN. We'll get to the Rockets Suns in a moment. Let's take one more call. On wants to talk Jim Crane. Garrick. It's like Eric with a G. Eric with a G. You're in the high.
Yeah.
What's up?
Hey, what's up, guys? So I think – I know it's not popular to give billionaires credit for anything, but I think if we zoom out and look at what Jim Crane has done, over the last, like, roughly decade, he's probably been the best owner in baseball. Think about it. He hired Jeff Luhnow, who probably was the best GM during his time. Then he let Jeff Luhnow go. He brings in James Click. And now that we've looked back on it, James Click was actually a really good GM. The moves he made were shrewd, considering the constraints he dealt with. And then he hired Dana Brown, and a lot of the fans complain about Dana Brown. But if you look at Dana Brown's drafts, his drafts have been tremendous. All his players are moving up rapidly through the farm system. And the moves he's made based on, you know, the constraints that he's dealt with have also been really good. That Kikuchi move was good. Those prospects they gave up, those were not highly touted prospects. And you basically got a guy who ended up being one of the top 10 pitchers in the league and helped you get to the playoffs. So I would give Jim Crane the benefit of the doubt and just say, let's look and see what happens after the Montero and Abreu signings. After that money comes off the books this year, let's see what the players that they acquired and the players they currently have and what they do in the upcoming draft. And then their international signing, the kid, I looked him up on YouTube, and he was actually the highest rated hitter of all the international signings. He had the highest grade, 65, when it comes to his hit tool. So I would kind of take a step back and just zoom out and look at Jim Crane and say, hey, this guy has done an excellent job.
No, appreciate the call, Garrett. Look, I think the biggest thing is he's not Drayton McClain. He's been willing to spend. I think that splashy, yeah, you can go in retrospect and question the hater move because did you really need him? And was that money better purposed somewhere else? But that's, you know, that's playing Monday morning quarterback. You look at it after the fact. But at the same time, he's never been afraid to go out and make the move that he thinks his team needs. And he did it with Verlander. And he did it, you know, twice with Verlander. And he did it with, you know, several other guys. So I don't think that it should ever be. It's not fair on him to say he's cheap. I think that from a business perspective, it is understandable to not want to go over the tax. But as a fan, I think it's also fair to be disappointed if you look at the roster and don't, you know, want him to do it simply because of the fact that, one, it's not your money, and two, you look at that outfield and you think that they need help.
I agree with almost everything Garrick said. If I had pushback on best owner in baseball, I don't even know who runs the Dodgers, bunch of bankers, right? Probably yeah. them.
I mean, the cagey move with the Ohtani deal, and that's a once-in-a-lifetime because you got a guy that's making so much money outside of Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
But that's a brilliant financial move.
But I like the take, Garrick. Like, I would say that Crane's one of the best owners in baseball. He's easily the best owner that the Astros have ever had, without a shadow of a doubt. You could have a conversation that he's in the best owner in Houston history convo, probably less,
though,
right?
Less is right there.
I would vote less.
I mean, Less brought two titles. Now, Crane's brought two titles, too, though. Yeah. So that's why he's in the mix. I'm a huge Tillman stan. You know that. So Tillman number one for me. But, yeah, would be in that conversation. No? Crane's brought two titles to Houston. Only two owners in the history of Houston sports have brought big three. I guess Les owned the Comets, right? So he brought a ton of titles. Big three sports. We're talking big three sports here, people.
Soccer matters, though.
Yeah, I don't know who owned the Dynamo then.
I don't either. I think Oscar De La Hoya was a part of the group, but he wasn't the majority.
Yeah.
He wasn't the majority.
Carton has a minor stock, too.
Yeah.
Well, he did, at least. I don't know if he still does.
I think he still does. Yeah.
But I don't know that with any sort of confidence. But, no, I that's why I agree with most of what Garrick says. I do think that Crane fell into trouble with the sign-stealing stuff. Him firing Luno, he felt like he was forced to. Look, maybe it was a mandate by Major League Baseball. But also his reaction to it, I don't love. I don't love that he fired Luno. I don't love that he became a meddling owner. I don't love that he fired James Click fresh off a World Series. I don't love that they went the entire offseason without a GM and they were playing fantasy general manager and doing a terrible job out of it. I hope he's learned his lesson. And I do like Dana Brown so far. I think that Dana Brown does give the Astros a chance to sustain this golden era. But it's not going to happen if Jim Crane doesn't let Dana Brown cook.
He has to. Because Dana Brown,
let him cook.
I believe in Dana Brown. To Garrick's point, I believe in Dana Brown's ability to evaluate talent. There's no doubt about it. I mean, he did it. You know, as an assistant GM in Atlanta. But so far, so good in terms of the talent that he's brought in and evaluated through the draft here. I think from a Crane perspective, you know, when you look at it, you know that he's been willing to do what needs to be done, and that's a big thing for any ownership group. But when you look at it too, he also has to know when to say when. He has to know when to step out of the picture and allow the people that he hires that he believes are quality of capable people to do their job. Let them do their job, and I think that's the biggest issue that we've had along the way. Is that sometimes he thinks too much, or because he played baseball, that he knows baseball in today's game and it becomes a fantasy baseball. And you're not in the same situation as some of these teams where you can make a financial screw up like the Abreu deal or Montero deal, but you can recover from it a lot easier than the way the Astros have had to try to recover from it.
Yeah, I just hope he learned his lesson with that offseason of playing fantasy GM, and now he's out of the way and he's back to letting his GM work. Crane is a great owner, terrible GM. Dana's a farm director masquerading as a GM. That's insulting.
I had lost my train of thought on the one part of Crane that I just want to get in before we switch gears. The whole sign stealing thing, the way he handled it, there was no like outline. There was uncharted waters. No one had ever been through it before. And I believe that he kind of, as it was all unfolding, and I think Major League Baseball tried to tell him exactly what was going to happen and what he should do, I believe that he felt like once he had to fire AJ and he had to fire Luno, that it would be frowned upon to try and bring them back. Little did he know that the Red Sox were going to go and do exactly that, and that those guys, you know, at least one of them would have jobs again. Because I think that he had very good relationships with both of those guys, and ideally he probably never wanted to fire him in the first place.
Yeah, maybe not. I wish he would have just let him be suspended a year and then, you know, let it play out. But that's not the way it went. All right, Rockets Suns yesterday. Thoughts on the Rockets win? And with the way Kevin Durant played yesterday, you want him in Houston? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
713-780-ESPN. Rockets beat the Suns yesterday, Blankers. What you think?
Glad they did. I had some concerns for most of the game.
They didn't play well.
And, I mean, the Suns without Booker and without Beal and without even Grayson Allen and some of the other guys, they were out. I'm like, you should just blow their doors off, get a solid win, get some extra guys on the bench, some minutes, and just move on. But instead, because it was a back-to-back, too, you'd like to rest the starters who all had to contribute some heavy minutes and some good performances. It wasn't pretty, but you got the win. I'll take it and just kind of try and move forward from that because I was hoping that it would have been a blowout.
Jalen inefficient, 4-for-15 from three, but does give you 22. Amin Thompson, another triple-double, 18-11-10, which is cool. Tari Eason, best game in a long time.
Oh, for sure.
25-9, 4 assists, 3 steals, did a little bit of everything. And then Dylan Brooks with a big shot down the stretch.
Yeah, Dylan Brooks, look. Look, you and I have gone back and forth on this. I hate the numbers, the money that they had to pay him, but he's been shooting the three ball very well all year.
Uh-huh.
And of late, he's shooting it even better than he's been doing all year. So from that standpoint alone, give him credit because he is, you know, when they're moving the ball, he ends up with a lot of just knockdown threes, and he's knocking them down. So that's big. And, yes, I've been harping on closing for a long time now. It wasn't really that tight, but at the same time, they got down 6 or 7, I think it was, going into the fourth quarter, and the fourth quarter is where they've had problems. Shepherd hits a three. They scored, I think, 6 points in a row to get right back into it. And then from there, they kind of put the foot on the gas and were able to kind of get, you know, take it to the victory. I'm glad that they got that done. I like the fact that the fourth quarter was as good as it was.
Yeah, it's a bad team. They should have won this game. Play Golden State tonight, 1.5 favorite. My biggest takeaway from this one, though, Blankers, I really want Kevin Durant on the Houston Rockets. I'm not trading the entire team. I'm not trading the entire team here. I'm not mortgaging the future. I'm not trading the farm. Kevin Durant would instantly be the best offensive player on the Rockets. By far. By far. I want Kevin Durant on Houston. What do I have to do to make this happen?
That's what you got to be scared about, Jeremy, because I don't want Kevin Durant on this team for that very reason. Well, there's two reasons. I think the first reason is I just think that he's aging and he's older already to the point where
we're all aging. Yes, today's the youngest day we'll ever be.
It's extremely risky for me to think that I want Kevin Durant for a couple more years and what the price tag is going to be, because Phoenix tried to get the price tag up pretty high before the deadline. You believe if they're going to move on from him and the owner doesn't want to rebuild, but if he does give up a guy like that, he's probably going to try and get as many of the young players from the Rockets as he can. And I look at the young players for the Rockets and I'm like, I just don't like the kind of how that would mesh with all the youth and then Kevin Durant. That's why I'm constantly looking at even a Booker, but guys that are more younger stars that can fit in with the squad you currently have. And I'm fearful of how much of that youth you would lose to get a guy like Kevin Durant.
It looks like the Suns want to do a soft rebuild because Booker doesn't want to leave the Suns. So that kind of throws a wrinkle into that. There's a wrench into that. Kevin Durant, just demand a trade. Force your way out so the Rockets can get you very, very cheap. Here was Durant after the game yesterday. It sounds like he's trying to get himself to Houston.
Yeah, JG, I mean, we built a good bond over the last few years. And to see his growth as a player, his confidence level has grown since he got into the league. Been working out with Jabari a couple times, somebody I always watched when he was in high school at Auburn. These guys just want to be great, man. You know, you're in the gym all summer, you're playing pickup, you go back from pickup to lifting weights to come back the next morning and do the same thing. You know, it's going to pay off at a certain point. So what I took from them is like the work ethic, you know, and attention to detail. And you got guys like Royale, Ime, and the rest of the coaching staff who's going to hold him to a standard every day. You're going to see growth in them pretty quickly.
He wants to be a Rocket so bad.
I don't think he does.
He desperately wants to be a Rocket.
I think he doesn't have all that many positive relationships in the league, but I think it's clear he likes the young guys that he called out and probably a couple more, and he definitely has worked with Ime in the past in Brooklyn. I don't know. Did he play with Royale at Texas?
I think they did. Vanessa Richardson said on the broadcast yesterday on The Shin that Royal Ivy taught Kevin Durant how to drive.
Huh. Okay. But I like
maybe he was on the staff, because it feels like that doesn't feel right.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but obviously they're both Texas guys. But you look at it and you say, well, you know, when the Rockets were pursuing LeBron in the past, LeBron didn't have any interest in coming to Houston. I think the fact that at least KD likes the guys, likes the coaching staff, likes things about Houston, that's great. I'm not going to deny what he did as a basketball player again last night, what he's been doing. It doesn't matter where he plays and who he plays with, and especially like last night when they have a depleted roster to put out there. He's a bucket every single possession that he touches the basketball. His ability, which it drives me nuts, and you and I have talked about this on and off the air about Jabari, is when he's got a smaller guy on him, he will flat out turn, face you up, and just make sure you know he can shoot over you and just continue to drop buckets right in your grill. And that he just is an unbelievable scorer. And if it was a younger Kevin Durant, I'd be all in. I just have some concerns about at his age what you'd have to and what you have to give up to give him.
Well, it'd be way more difficult to get a younger Kevin Durant obviously than an older Kevin Durant. I think if you added Kevin Durant to this team, well, it's true. Yeah. No, but I'm saying it would probably be impossible to trade for a younger Kevin Durant. Like the fact that he is older now makes it feasible. I don't think it'd be feasible with the younger Kevin Durant.
I don't think the owner of the Suns wants to give up Kevin Durant in the offseason. I just think he realizes this Beal deal has turned their entire situation upside down because he has been completely less than, and that if Booker is the guy that they're going to build around, then the only guy that they can really get anything for is Kevin Durant.
Do you think the Rockets are a contender with Kevin Durant? Do you want Kevin Durant? 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair has got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.